On this episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, we discuss the latest news and information about the ASC industry and discuss RN-administered moderate or conscious sedation, the regulations, and the credentialing requirements.
Welcome to the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, a weekly podcast for anyone interested in the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry. This episode is sponsored by Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies. The ASC regulatory environment is increasingly challenging, but organizations that outsource their regulatory oversight to Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies have an edge. AHS works with ASCs to oversee their quality assurance program, run their meetings, develop education programs, and to always be prepared for surveys. Welcome to episode 30 of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey for July 23rd, 2018, recording from our studio in Rochester, New York. This is Sue Cronkite, Senior Nurse Consultant with AHS. I'm here with John Gailey, the owner of Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies and Eden Group Development, and one of the nation's leading ASC industry experts in regulatory compliance, finance, and administration. John is the author of over 10 books about the ASC industry and a frequent national speaker on all aspects of ambulatory surgery center management.
Well, hello. I this is really feeling weird. It's
I know.
Like 2 weeks since.
Seems like it's been a long time.
Yeah, it does. I actually forgot how to set up some of the equipment here. So, so this is our first podcast with the new biweekly schedule, and I'm enjoying it already because we had a whole week off. But I've been kind of busy.
Yes.
So yeah, I did a survey last week that went right into the weekend. It was scheduled to go into the weekend. I don't know why I did a Saturday survey, but so much. But it was a lot of fun. I always love getting out there and, doing the real thing. You know, we're so used to having surveys done on organizations that it's nice every once in a while to be on the other side. And I tell you, I learned so much for so many of these organizations that I visit. So great to be back, though. And then I'm here. Actually, we're recording this podcast. I think I hop in a plane in about 2 hours, right?
I
head off to Texas. So yeah. Gonna be a busy week. So we have been waiting and telling our audience that the CMS 2019 rate should be coming out soon, and they are not out.
No, we are still waiting.
It's the 22nd already. I can't remember all of my history here, but I don't think it's ever been this late.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see what happens. I know there's gonna be a lot of information when it comes out, and we're gonna have probably at least one, maybe even two episodes where we talk about it. In depth, because of course the rates, the new procedures that are added, the impact on the Medicare quality reporting initiatives, and really the future of what's going on with the CMS-ASC relationship comes out during these regulations. So it's very important that we get on top of it when they do come out. And we need to point out that we're most anxiously watching for the changes in the Medicare quality reporting and the OAS CAPS proposal. So we'll see what happens there.
Yep.
As always, we'll continually evaluate the needs for our episodes and adjust accordingly. And if we have to do a weekly episode next week if the announcement comes out, we'll of course adjust accordingly. So yep. Sue, have we got some news for the week?
We do. Well, according to an article in Modern Healthcare, AHRQ, or the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, which is part of the Department of Health and Human Services, has asked the White House Office of Management and Budget for permission to develop a patient safety database for ASCs, and that would be similar to the database that they currently maintain for hospitals and nursing homes. Some of the reasons that they cited were the growth of ASCs and the expanding scope of services, the implications that can have on public health. The article quoted Bill Prentice, the CEO of ASCAB, that he had said, "We want every surgery center to be doing that kind of internal review of the culture and communication to ensure that the patient gets the right care." And I think that's how most of us feel in the industry, that having that information we can use to improve care and also to show the great care that we're giving, you know, is really just a benefit to us.
Absolutely. So we have a great message out there. Yeah. And the more information that we can get to prove that we're providing good quality care and to demonstrate it mathematically, what type of care that is, I think is going to be good for us.
I think so. And the kind of gives you something to benchmark with.
Right.
They have proposed a voluntary submission of data from the Ambulatory Surgery Center Survey on Patient Safety Culture, the ASC SOPS.
Or SOP, or SOPS. I think SOPS sounds better.
I think so. Which would then be compiled and used as a database on their website. According to AHRQ, the goal of this project is to create the ASC SOPS database, which would, they would present the results from ASCs that voluntarily submit their data, present trend data for ASCs, and provide data to the ASCs to facilitate internal assessment and learning in the patient safety improvement process, and provide supplemental information to help the ASCs identify their strengths and areas with potential for improvement in patient safety culture. So it could be some useful information.
And this is yet another benchmarking tool that we could be using in our own organizations. We, you know, everybody should by now know that a very important part of your quality improvement program is determining how you compare against other organizations, that is external benchmarking. So this is yet another tool that you can be using. And I encourage, I know it's expected to be voluntary, but really the more we participate in this, the more we can share that data across, you know, a wide spectrum of the healthcare community. So
yeah, and it looks like, I mean, you never know until it's in practice, but it looks like they're going to try to really make it as pain-free as possible, right, you know, and give some good feedback to people.
That's so good.
August also is National ASC Month. I know we're not quite there, but
yeah, we need to get prepared, though. Yeah, so yeah. ASCA is encouraging the centers to host events at their local center centers in the communities, you know, try to get some publicity here, and also to ask their local representatives in Congress and, you know, the both at a national level and a state level to invite them out to their centers.
Yep, and they've got some good tools on their website. Template of an invitation for the legislator, ways to follow up afterwards, and just some great ideas like that.
So. We probably better give the ASC Association website again. It's www.ascassociation.org.
And if you are participating in ASCA's Clinical and Operational Benchmarking Survey, remember that July 31st is the last date to enter the second quarter's data.
And again, I always like to really encourage this. Every time I do a speech, I ask how many people are participating in this. This data is incredible. It's useful for you, not only for your accreditation and CMS requirements, but also the data will help you in your own organization determine how you compare to other organizations. So if you're a member, there's a discounted price that you can also participate if you're not a member of ASCA, but of course, we're encouraging everybody to become members of ASCA. But definitely look into this and please participate. So the more people we have participating, the better that data, that benchmarking data is.
Yep.
Okay, let's take a short break and we'll jump into our topic of the episode, which is moderate sedation. So, Sue, one of the issues that I sometimes see when I visit facilities is what to do with regard to nurse-administered conscious sedation and to make sure that all the rules are being followed. And just it's come up a couple times recently with some centers that I visited. So the American Association, by the way, thank you for giving me this reference, Sue. The American Association of Moderate Sedation Nurses, which is AAMSN.org. Actually, they provide what's called the Certified Sedation Registered Nurse, which I didn't even know until you gave me this reference, was a thing. So apparently you can become certified as a Certified Sedation Registered Nurse, CSRN. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a good thing. But anyway, their website has a lot of great information, and I thought we would just start by mentioning a few of the definitions they have there in that. So moderate sedation or conscious sedation is a drug-induced depression of consciousness during which patients respond purposely to verbal commands, either alone or accompanied by light tactile stimulation. No interventions are required to maintain a patient's airway, and spontaneous ventilation is adequate. Cardiovascular function is usually maintained. So the question is, who can administer conscious sedation? We know that anesthesiologists, CRNAs, you know, and physicians that have been properly trained in it, and obviously dentists and oral surgeons have education in this, but mm-hmm. registered nurses can do it if they have the proper training. And that's really to our issue today that, you know, many organizations can't afford, or in the case of some GI procedures, insurance companies do not pay for anesthesia in those cases. So mm-hmm. in order to make sure that we're properly taking care of our patient, that we're administering the medication in a proper way and monitoring the patient, we have to look into safe ways to administer and monitor that patient. So because patients can slip into a deep sleep, proper monitoring of conscious sedation is necessary. And healthcare providers have to monitor the patient's heart rate, the blood pressure, breathing, oxygen level, and alertness throughout and after the procedure. The provider who monitors the patient receiving the conscious sedation should have no other responsibilities during the procedure and should remain with the patient at all times during the procedure. So, Sue, this is where I think people sometimes get into trouble because it does say that they should have no other responsibilities and should mm-hmm. remain with the patient. But they're allowed to have what they call brief interruptible tasks during which they can be interrupted for brief periods of time, but they're still, their primary duty is still to be a sedation.
Yeah. So some examples of brief interruptible tasks are tying a sterile gown and opening supplies like the suture packet, lap sponges that are within the room when the circulator is unavailable.
Right. And interesting, note that last line there, when the circulator is unavailable, mm-hmm. which implies that this nurse is not the circulator.
Yes.
So that there should be somebody else that's available to do this. But, you know, and I think it's fine if the doctor asks, or, you know, the other nurse or the tech in the room asks for mm-hmm. something to be opened, or, you know, if behind the conscious sedation nurse is a supply that needs to be handed, mm-hmm. you know, into the field. Those all work. But, you know, I've seen situations where the conscious sedation nurse is on the other side of the table or performing a duty, you know, that takes them away from the heart monitor and all that equipment for, you know, a couple minutes at a time. And I don't think that that's appropriate.
Now they have to be right in there and able to see any changes.
Right.
You know, and you really can't, when they say brief, it really has to be brief, and you can't even during that brief time be out of the room or,
right, absolutely. You know,
really focused intently on anything else.
Right. And to your point, that's extremely important. When we say brief, we don't include leaving the room for mm-hmm. a brief period of time. That nurse has to be in that room for all times. Now, we might be stating the obvious, but unfortunately, not everybody mm-hmm. knows that this is obvious. So yeah. I think it's important that we make a point about it. Mm-hmm. And if the patient is receiving propofol for moderate sedation or analgesia, the RN providing the that sedation should not even perform those short interruptible tests. So if you move to a higher level, such as propofol, even those brief interruptible tasks should not be included there. Mm-hmm. So that, I think that's another important area. Obviously, it shouldn't leave the room, as we talked about. It should be in constant attendance with unrestricted immediate visual and physical access to the patient. There shouldn't be anything between the patient mm-hmm. and that nurse, but they should have immediate access to all of their equipment that's monitoring the patient. So if something happens and they have to check the equipment to make sure that it's working properly, mm-hmm. they don't have to move across the room to do that. So
yeah, they can see the monitor and they can see the patient, because, you know, both of those things you have to
right.
always be ready to respond.
So I did want to point out that this information, a lot of what we just talked about, is from the Guideline for Care of a Patient Receiving Moderate Sedation and Analgesia, which is in the Guidelines for Perioperative Practice, which is from the Association of Operating Room Nurses. And this particular document is dated 2015. So next comes the question, how do we document the competence of conscious sedation nurses? So there are many courses available for training moderate sedation nurses. Many of them are available online. The Association of Operating Room Nurses, AORN, has their course, which is very good. I really highly recommend that. But there are other avenues for doing that. You don't have to go off to a school to do this. Mm-hmm. A lot of it can be done online. And after they take and they pass the course, they should have competency performed on them by a qualified provider. I think some of the best providers that could do that competency would be an anesthesiologist. Yeah. But if that's not available, you know, obviously an appropriately trained RN who already knows how to do that would be a good person mm-hmm. for doing that competency. Yeah.
And of course, you have to be given the privileges by the governing body.
Right.
Before they can provide those services.
And that means that it should be in writing.
Yes.
So this is another area, thank you for mentioning that, that sometimes we forget, is that this, it's not like other tasks that a nurse would be given. It really has to be specifically mentioned. It needs to be specifically approved by the governing body. It needs to be writing. You should have a form that's in the employee's personnel file mm-hmm. that documents that they have been credentialed to do this and demonstrating the education that they received and the competency that they mm-hmm. had done. It does bring up an interesting question. So I bounce this back to you as a nurse, is how frequently should we be doing these competencies? Now, so by the way, I'm not sure there's a real right answer on this. So as a surveyor, I'm even saying that I'm not sure that there's an interval. I'll tell you what's your personal opinion?
I would think probably annually.
Yeah.
But, and it probably depends on the frequency if somebody is, you know, using their skills, because I think you can lose it quickly if it's not something you're doing a lot.
I agree with you. I mean, that's exactly what my feeling was, but I wanted to ask a nurse first, but because I mean, we wait 2 years to credential a doctor, sometimes three years. So I guess one could make the argument, well, you know, what's going to happen in those 2 years? But this is so important. Yeah. And unlike the physician who's doing the same thing every day, all these nurses aren't necessarily doing, you know, conscious sedation every day. And of course, this is such a critical area. The ramifications of not doing it right are so severe that I think we have to worry about that.
Yeah. And that could even be, I mean, you know, you can have a guideline in your center, but if you see something where either you just feel the nurse hasn't had enough practice with it, or you're noticing something a little different, or there's any new information, you know, I can't hurt to just sort of, run back through there, check the competency if they have any questions.
Right, good point. And I think they should go through the education again periodically. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that has to be done every year, but definitely a competency. And that just brings up a conversation we had a couple episodes ago talking about competencies. A recent survey that I just did, the competency issue came up again. And I think the facility was kind of surprised that I was saying that you really should be doing competencies every year. Mm-hmm. They hadn't done competencies since, the first, since the nurses were employed. And I personally feel that competency work has to be done on an ongoing basis. Most like we kind of expect people to have annual performance evaluations. This is really performance evaluation for nursing, for clinical
staff. Yeah, you can develop bad habits. You can just get lazy even without meaning to, but you start doing something a certain way and pretty soon you kind of forget the way it's supposed to be done. So it just kind of brings you back to that, best practice.
Right. Well said. And again, I think things change. Drugs are changing. The ways of monitoring, even new equipment that we get, we need to make sure that we're properly trained in how to use that. Are we using the right proper emergency drugs in our crash cart? That's an issue that I found interesting. I don't remember. One of our clients or not, but we're going through the pharmacy list with the doctor. And as we're going down that list, asking the doctor, if he wanted all these drugs. And he said, no, I don't use that drug anymore. Mm-hmm. And, it's in the formulary. Yeah. It's sitting in the thing. We're purchasing this thing. Mm-hmm. It might not have been a lot of money, but, why keep it in stock if it's something the doctor never intends to use? So just evaluating all that and, going through that formula. So I think, a good point to be made here is that not only should we be doing these competencies for the sedation, but and competencies for everything else, but really evaluating all the drugs and the protocols that you use. And of course, a big part of this is making sure that you do an annual drill on a code blue. And to that end, the conscious sedation nurses should be involved in that drill. You should act it out. It should be a real scenario-based drill, documented, and then write down the good things and the bad things that happened during it.
What you can learn from it.
What you learned from it. So, okay, let's take a short break, and we'll come back, and we'll see what's going on in the ASC industry.
One of the sponsors of the ASC podcast with John Gailey is Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies. John, can you tell us about some of the services that AHS offers?
Sure. So we are a regulatory oversight organization. We basically are involved in the business of helping organizations to always be prepared for surveys and to respond to surveys and just to become your outsourced regulatory compliance organization. We also do financial oversight too, but the stuff that's probably most pertinent to most of our listeners relates to regulatory compliance and accreditation compliance. So our goal is always to have our organizations remain prepared for surveys. And so to that end, we maintain the policy manuals. We develop educational programs. We can even do the educational programs for the organization. We oversee the quality improvement program. We write the minutes for the quality improvement program, if that's what the organization wishes. And we help run the governing body meetings, again, if that's what the organization wants, and we'll write the governing body minutes for that. We also do periodic mock surveys. We help the organization through a survey, and we'll help them respond to the plan of correction necessary after a deemed status survey. And most importantly, this is all at a fixed price that might surprise most of our listeners.
Okay, so how do our listeners learn more?
So for a free, no-obligation consultation, give me a call at 585-594-1167 or through email at info@ah-strategies.com. And you can also visit our website at www.ah-strategies.com and fill out the Contact Us form.
Okay, thanks, John. So let's talk about some upcoming events in the ASC industry. Every week we will inform you of upcoming events. If you would like your event to be included in the podcast, please send the event information to info@ascpodcast.com.
Note that we have a calendar of events on our website at www.ascpodcast.com.
Registration for the online CAPE exam that will be administered during the month of October at various testing centers throughout the United States is August 1st through 31st, 2018. To register, go to www.abotcaip.org. That's www.aboutcape.org.
California Ambulatory Surgery Association has the CASA Annual Conference, September 5th through the 7th, 2018, in Huntington Beach.
The Ohio State Association meeting will be September 18th through the 20th at the Hilton Polaris in Columbus, Ohio.
And we'll be there, both with a booth, and I think I'm doing two speeches there, and love to support all of our friends in Ohio. Pennsylvania Ambulatory Surgery Association annual meeting is October 1st, 2018 at the Sheridan Harrisburg Hershey Hotel in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And again, we will be there also with the booth, and I'll be speaking. I think I have one speech there.
The New York State Association of ASC's fall conference will be held at the Roosevelt Hotel on October 11th, 2018.
And I should note that the Roosevelt Hotel is in New York City. This will be our first time down in the city in a very long time, and looking very much forward to this very important conference. The fifth annual New York Metro ASC Symposium is November 2nd, 2018 at the Marriott Marquis in the heart of Times Square.
The CASA Infection Prevention Seminar is November 7th and 8th, 2018 in Costa Mesa.
Registration for the online CASC exam that will be administered during the month of October at various testing locations throughout the United States is August 1st through the 31st, 2018. And to register, go to www.aboutcasc.org. That's www.aboutcasc.org. And I really should take the opportunity here to encourage people to look into CASC certification, which is Certified Ambulatory Surgery Center Administrators, and the CAPE, which is a CIP credential, which is a Certified Ambulatory Infection Preventionist. And go to those respective websites and learn more about those credentials and, help the industry, help your careers, and help show that we are deeply committed to having people in our industry, leading the industry, that have excellent credentials in those areas. So. And I think that's about it for the week. So if you'd like your event listed on the website or discussed on air, please email us at info@ascpodcast.com. So that's it. Please spread the word about our podcast with your friends and colleagues and do us the honor of hitting the subscribe button. We'll see you in 2 weeks unless we hear from the CMS in the meantime. Take it easy.
This podcast is an educational and operational tool and is not intended to be a comprehensive resource for all the rules, regulations, and standards that an ambulatory surgery center must meet. The advice provided should not be considered as, nor does it constitute legal advice or opinion. When reviewing specific situations involving legal and regulatory issues, attorneys and other professionals should be consulted. This has been a production of Eden Group Development, all rights reserved. We would like to thank this week's sponsors. First, Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, one of the nation's leading regulatory compliance and financial oversight firms. For a free consultation, contact John Gailey today at 585-594-1167 or through email at info@ah-strategies.com. And Eden Group Development, which publishes ASC Regulatory Compliance Series, the ASC industry's leading books, including The Survey Guide for ASCs, A Guide to the CMS Conditions for Coverage and Interpretive Guidelines for Ambulatory Surgery Centers, and Ambulatory Surgery Center Governance, a guide for ambulatory surgery center owners and governing body members. These must-have books are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble or directly from the publisher at reg-books.com. That's reg-books.com. If you're interested in advertising or sponsoring the ASC podcast with John Gailey, please email us at info@ascpodcast.com. We would love to hear your questions and comments. Please email us at comments@ascpodcast.com.